Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, we will conclude our anniversary series, 25 Years in 25 Days, with excerpts from last night's event at the Ethical Culture Society on what has changed in the world and what hasn't changed in 25 years, with the New Yorker magazine editor David Remnick, public radio and television host and author Tavis Smiley, and New York Times columnist Gail Collins. We will hear most of their interaction from last night's event. And the first ever Brian Lehrer Show People's Kazoo Cacophony and Orchestra playing the Brian Lehrer Show theme. Thank you, audience, for your extreme musicianship last night. But we begin today with Governor Andrew Cuomo joining us for a candidate interview with Election Day coming on Tuesday. We have heard previously on the program from the Republican candidate, Rob Astorino, and the Green Party candidate, Howie Hawkins. Governor, thanks very much for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
My pleasure, Brian.
Most of the talk by all parties in this campaign has been about your record to date. I'd like to start with the opposite of that. If you are reelected, what would your top priorities be for your second term?
Good question. The first, we have made what I believe is significant progress over the past 4 years. And the reforms that we put in place, Brian, I want to continue them, right? We broke gridlock in Albany for 40 years. Albany couldn't even get a budget passed for 23 years out of 40. So I want to continue the functionality of government, if you will. I want to get some things done that we failed to get done. The Women's Equality Agenda, which is a Bill of Rights for women that recognizes women are still discriminated against in our society. And New York would be the first state to have a Women's Bill of Rights. We couldn't get it passed because the Republicans wouldn't support the choice provision. I believe that you have Republicans who still want to roll back Roe v. Wade, and our law would codify Roe v. Wade in New York State, and they're unwilling to do that. Even though Roe v. Wade is 40 years ago, they still want to relitigate Roe v. Wade. I want to raise the minimum wage. I want to pass the DREAM Act. I want to pass public finance, which we couldn't get done with the legislature last year. Continue our economic development in upstate New York, what I call the places left behind, and the poorer places in New York City. Bronx unemployment is just unacceptable, and we have pockets of poverty that don't get the attention or dialogue they deserve. So that would be the short list.
Republican Rob Astorino is running mostly on the platform that he would create more jobs than you because he would cut taxes more than you. Here is 30 seconds of Mr. Astorino on this program.
Well, we see what happens in New York. If we're the highest tax state in America, highest tax city in America, then why don't we just double the taxes and that should make us great, right? It's not. It's why businesses are leaving. It's why unemployment is unacceptably high. It's why people can't find a good paying job. And, you know, I live in the highest tax county in America, and we cut taxes, and the economy rebounded. We actually have 30,000 new private sector jobs. So tell that to the people who were unemployed, who are now working a good job, if they think that policy worked. It did.
Rob Astorino referring to his job as Westchester County Executive. Governor, your reaction to that?
Yeah, first, you know, there's a lack of credibility, Jeremy. Just listen to what the man said to you. I live in the highest taxed county in the nation. I cut taxes. Oh, really? You're still the highest taxed county in the nation. And Westchester is. Highest property taxes in the United States of America, not just in New York State. And that's after 5 years of Rob Astorino. So the internal inconsistency is breathtaking. But look, his philosophy and there is a very stark choice in this election. He is not a moderate Republican. You know, New York has a history of moderate Republicans, what they called Rockefeller Republicans, which were almost liberal Republicans. Our Republicans in the Senate now are moderate Republicans. They live on Long Island. They live in moderate districts, and they're moderates. Astorino is a Washington brand ultra-conservative. And this is the move from Washington to bring this new ultra-conservative to New York. Well, this policy, let me finish, Brian, if you don't mind. This policy is against a woman's right to choose. They will not recognize Roe v. Wade. He was on the Right to Life. He's supported by the Right to Life Party. They're against the gay marriage because it violates their religious beliefs.
There's no question that he's a social conservative, but my question was about taxes, and it sounds like he would cut taxes more than you or try to as governor, and I wonder if you have either more tax cut or tax change of any kind that you would like to get through in your second term. I acknowledge you get a lot of criticism from the left for having cut corporate taxes too much for them and squeezed school districts with the property tax cap, as the left sees it. Do you have any plans for additional tax changes of any kind?
Well, two things. First, the question isn't cutting taxes. I said 4 years ago, and what I have done is actually cut taxes, right? He still has the highest property tax county in the nation. We've actually cut taxes down to the corporate level is down to the 50s, personal income tax down to the level of the 60s. So we cut taxes. The question is how you do it. And we put in a progressive graduated tax rate. So the more you make, the more you pay. What the ultra-conservatives want, which is Astorino, cut taxes for the rich, cut the top end, and I don't agree with that. That is the old trickle-down. And then cut savagely state services like Medicaid. So you give the rich a tax break, and literally cut Medicaid to the point where he said he would cut dental services for seniors on Medicaid. That's not what New York does. It's not fair. It's not logical. And it's repugnant to the concept of New York.
So no particular additional tax changes that you have in mind for your second term?
Not in particular. We have a tax cut plan that phases in over the next few years, right, with a property tax cap that continues.
On big money in politics, one of the things that you've said needs to change. WNYC's Andrea Bernstein did a story last week that was largely about how you use the Democratic State Committee as a way to avoid any political donation and spending limits. I'd like to ask you a question or two based on that report. Hedge fund magnate James Simon, for example, gave $1 million, Andrea reported, to that committee because no limits apply, and that the fund is used to buy TV commercials promoting you, not just normal housekeeping functions that a housekeeping fund would suggest. Is this consistent with the values that you say you believe in of reducing the influence of big money on state politics?
Well, forget that. That's not the problem, Brian. It's worse than that, with all due respect. You look at the newspapers today, you have these independent expenditure committees all over the place, millions and millions of dollars, very little disclosure. You don't know who they are. You can't even tell by the name who they are. And there are no limits. And that's part of the federal law. I support public finance, but the old people who support public finance have the old paradigm in mind, where public finance meant you're going to limit the money that comes into politics. Public finance doesn't mean that anymore. You'll have public finance, and you will still have all these independent expenditure committees that can raise unlimited funds by law with very little disclosure, and you can have multiple, quote-unquote, independent expenditure committees. And then, by the way, independent expenditure committees are run by associates of the candidate. So the whole system is a mockery.
But would you endorse limiting how much could be given to the state party committee as an example of that, or how much that money could be used for political ads? Andrea's report, consistent with what you just said, referenced how the same consulting company that buys your TV campaign commercials buys commercials with this supposedly outside money that say the same things about you.
Yeah, but that's all perfectly within the bounds of the law. And you are talking about a minor issue compared to the major issue, which is stopping the unregulated, unrestricted flow of money through these independent expenditure committees. That's the problem with the system. And if we don't remedy that, you're putting Band-Aids on multiple bullet wounds.
Well, why not put a Band-Aid on this bullet wound if it's become such a funnel of unlimited donations that you've been able to take advantage of?
Yeah, I don't believe that's correct. But, you know, I don't know the facts of the situation you're talking about. But I know that it's not about the state parties, which are highly regulated compared to these independent expenditure committees.
One last thing about campaigns and corruption. In your televised debate last week, your opponent, Mr. Astorino, asked twice if anyone on your staff, including yourself, has been subpoenaed by the U.S. Attorney's Office about the way you ended the Moreland Commission on corruption. He didn't get an answer. Have you or any member of your staff been subpoenaed by the U.S. Attorney?
Yeah, because what I said to him then was if you have any questions about the U.S. Attorney's investigation, you should ask him. I made some comments at one time about his investigation, and it was suggested that I refer all comments to the U.S. Attorney, which is what I'm doing. We've cooperated. The Moreland Commission and anyone on my team has been told to cooperate with the U.S. Attorney.
Before you go, I got a mass political email yesterday that had your name as the sender, and that made it seem like you were urging people to vote for you on the Women's Equality Party line. Are you asking the public to do that rather than on the Democratic Party line or any other that you have?
You will get an email from me, hopefully, asking you to vote on several lines. The Women's Equality Party, Women's Equality Agenda is something that's very important to me. I think it can be a national precedent, and it empowers women in a way that's never been done. It's almost amazing when you think about it. We formed every kind of fringe party for every kind of reason. We have Democrat, Republican, green, red, white, blue, working people, working short people, working tall people. We've never had a women's party. This is the home of Seneca Falls. Let the women make their voice heard. And that's what the Women's Party is about. You'll be getting an email saying, please vote for the school bond issue to invest $2 billion in technology in schools. Obviously, the main party is the Democratic Party. I'm also on the Independence Party. I'm also on the Working Families Party.
But you want people to vote on the Women's Equality Party line, it sounds like.
I want people to vote on the Women's Equality Party. That would be publicizing the Women's Equality Agenda, which is something that I want to get passed. I couldn't get it passed last year, and I'm looking to build support for that agenda. And I said when it failed last year, I was going to make a major issue of it in this campaign. And if the legislature wants to tell the women of this state to go to heck, I'm going to let the women of this state know that they were told to go to heck. So, and that's what the Working Women's Equality Party is all about.
So one thing that's important here, as you dismiss, as you did a minute ago, the Working This Party, the Working These People Party, is that the Working Families Party, major force in New York state politics now, thinks you're out to destroy it with the Women's Equality Party line, because if you divide women like that, the progressive vote like that, the Working Families Party won't get the 50,000 that it needs for governor to preserve its ballot line for the next 4 years, and you won't have them pressuring you from the left with as much clout as they've been doing. Why threaten the existence of the Working Families Party, if we assume there aren't unlimited third-party votes to go around, with this new party?
Oh, I think that's a really tortured analysis by whoever gave that to you. There are women. To say to women in this state, you should consider organizing to make your voice heard, when the women just had their right to choose, which is a fundamental right for women, Brian, and to say to them, you shouldn't organize to make your voice heard so the legislature passes the Women's Equality Act for some tortured political analysis, I think misses the point. I'm here to make social change. I want to pass this Women's Equality Act. I want to help women. And I think organizing women helps to do that. There are Democratic women who vote on the Democratic line, who can vote on the Women's Equality line. There are Republican women who could vote on the Women's Equality line. There is 50,000 votes sets a party. There's going to be over 4 million votes cast. But I would be less concerned, and I am less concerned, with the internal political machinations of who has political power. And I'm more interested in social change, Brian. And I'm more interested in passing the Women's Equality Act.
Last question, and you can add any concluding remarks to your answer to this question. On the Ebola quarantine policy, which of course continues to be in the news, if I may, you say you have balanced individual rights and public safety, but many public health experts are concerned that you've increased irrational fears rather than calm people down with facts, because the facts of who is contagious seem to suggest no public risk on subways and restaurants and bowling alleys if people feel well enough to be out. But your policy increases fears of exactly those things, they say. So have you sowed confusion by caving into public fears?
The public health experts, I presume, are doctors and nurses who you're talking to, who obviously don't like the policy because they would be affected by it. The policy is where Doctors Without Borders now has a policy that says you don't go back to work for 3 weeks and you take your temperature twice a day, but you don't go back to work. Our policy would say you don't go back to work and you stay at home, but we'll pay your salary. And the doctors don't like the part about having to stay at home. For obvious reasons. I understand their concern. I don't think it's that big a hardship. The people of the state of New York overwhelmingly support it. Poll came out today. 84% of the people in New York want a 3-week home quarantine. 94% of the people in the nation want a home quarantine. And I think that actually gives people comfort, Brian. I think the lack of a policy, I think a policy that they think makes no sense, I think the experience that they went through where we went on this hunt to find out where the person had been, on what subway, at what time, at what restaurant, and had people wondering did they happen to come in contact, I think that's what spreads fear. And I think the certainty we gave, the common sense approach that we gave actually calmed people. And that shows. We don't have to guess. After Dr. Craig Spencer and that whole episode, travel on the subways, commutation stayed exactly the same. There was not an iota of a drop in circulation. Because people felt safe. They heard the policy. It made sense to them. They agree with it. 80%, and that's what brought the calm, so I'm proud of it. In terms of closing comments, I don't think this race is about these little internal political games. I think it's a stark ideological contrast. Mr. Astorino is an ultra-conservative. He wants to raise taxes on the rich, and he wants to cut services for the poor. He's against gay marriage. He's against the woman's right to choose. He's against Common Core. He wants to repeal the gun law that we put in place that makes New York the safest state in terms of gun laws that we passed after Sandy Hook. He wants to allow guns to be taught in schools, in elementary school, teach our kids how to use guns in elementary school. I mean, that's the philosophy that we're talking about here. And I understand the ultra-conservative theory. It does not apply in a place like New York. This is a man who's being sued by the federal government for discrimination in his own county for 5 years by the Department of Housing and Urban Development that I used to run for exclusionary zoning and not allowing low-income and minorities to live in his county, and has been fined $20 million by the federal government and has to give a deposition because the U.S. attorney says he's been lying about trying to resolve it. So this is really a night and day difference in ideologies between the progressive tradition that is New York and the ultra-conservatives who are trying to take over Washington and bring it statewide and nationwide. And I'm going to do everything I can to resist it. It may sell in other parts of the country, but that doesn't sell here.
Governor, thank you for your time. If you're reelected, we look forward to continuing the dialogue.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, more to come, including excerpts from our 25th anniversary event at Ethical Culture last night. Stay with us.